Air and Marine Operations here in Tucson, what do you guys do?
So Air Marine Operations were one of the three law enforcement components of Customs and Border Protection. We're the smallest of the three. Here for Arizona, we cover the 262 miles of linear border all the way up to almost to the northern border if we get called for that. We also provide support for national security events such as State of the Union, Super Bowl. We'll do aerial airspace security along with other entities like the Air Force and other law enforcement agencies. Particularly here, our primary mission is to provide U.S. Border Patrol with their aerial support as part of the border security mission. So the lion's share of our flight hours and energy goes towards supporting U.S. Border Patrol.
When it comes to that support of Border Patrol, it seems like after our flight, that breaks into two roles, apprehension or help with the law enforcement side, and then the rescue, the first aid, the medical. Is that a good way to describe how you all support Border Patrol?
Yes, those are things we do out on our flights. Wouldn't necessarily divvy them up in two separate mission sets. We provide aircraft that go support the agents on the ground via the Arizona Air A2C2
Arizona Air
Coordination Center. It's fairly new. So through the Arizona Air Coordination Center, they receive requests from the Border Patrol stations and the agents in the field, and then they'll almost like a dispatch, not as defined, but provide us with where the work is, so our aircraft can operate more efficiently instead of patrolling, if you will, just flying back and forth. They can go directly to the agents on the ground to provide what help they need. Is it they are tracking sign for a group, and are they know the direction. Our aircraft can help cut the time those agents spend. Can reduce the amount of agents necessary to look for a group. We can also verify that there is nothing there, so they can move on to something else. The rescues come in. Those are on call. We can't plan those. So they, as we get the calls for the rescues, then we will respond. A lot of the calls go through the A2C2. They'll call over here to the air branch, and we'll determine what asset is necessary based off of the location, the terrain, what agents are on the ground on scene, what are their medical qualifications, to determine whether we use something like our AS-350, the helicopter you flew on today. And if we can get into the area, maybe we can put in an EMT or a paramedic to help get the person out while ground teams work their way to them. Or if it's something a little bit more dangerous, we may need to use our UH-60, which we have hoist capability.
When it comes to, and I understand based on our flight today, that a call or a mission that starts in one category can quickly move to the other and back and forth. Is there a percentage that breaks down of the number of missions you all fly that are rescue related versus enforcement related, or is it too hard to tell because things switch when you get there?
Yeah, we don't necessarily track percentage. Those percentages aren't in the numbers. This year we've done upwards of over 50 rescues between using our hoist, and we also have our, it's called long line capability, which is a fast rope you've probably seen on TV where it looks like a fire pole, they're sliding down. Well, we can also use that system to hook people up to relocate them to an area where somebody on the ground can attend to them. And a rescue may not always end up with a hoist rescue. We may be able to land, which is always our first option, our first choice, preferred choice, because it's the safest. Then we step up from there because those operations are very high risk. So perfect world, we land, we put people out. They provide the medical care, retrieve them, and we relocate them to the first point of advanced medical care. That may be, one of the Borstar paramedics from U.S. Border Patrol at the bottom of a mountain. That may be an ambulance on the side of a road. Life, limb, or eyesight, if the EMT or paramedic deems it's necessary, we will relocate to a hospital. But we are not an air ambulance. We are not equipped. But we can, if deemed necessary, expedite somebody to a hospital.
Especially so our listeners understand, how do you define what a rescue is versus, you know, just, for lack of a better term, helping someone out? And I guess in some ways that may be in the eye of the beholder. If I've twisted my ankle, but other than that I'm fine, I may feel like it's a rescue, but to you guys it may just be more of an encounter.
Now, if you cannot exit the area you're in under your own power, I would consider that a rescue. Whether it is a twisted ankle, broken leg, contusions, if you need assistance, medical assistance, or even just humanitarian assistance, that I believe would be defined as a rescue.
I would assume we had, let me try that again. Earlier this year, we had an amazing heat wave for a week and a half, 2 weeks. I would assume rescues went up at that time. And is there do rescues flow with the seasons?
Generally, they do. This year was kind of an anomaly. At the beginning of the year, we had more rescues in the winter season than we've seen over the years past. I've been in and out of Tucson for my 22nd year now. So I've left, come back, left, come back. But winter is usually very low in rescues. But this year we've executed a fair amount that we normally don't see. And we're also seeing them in the higher mountain areas, like the Babakiri Mountain Ranges, the Huachuca Mountains, you know, those high altitude type environments.
What was it about this winter, if you have any theories, as to why rescues were high?
I would say increased flow of traffic, probably politically driven from just the messaging that is down in Central America and Mexico.
Just to kind of run off a little bit on a side topic, when we were out on the flight line and looking at the pictures, it's not just helicopters that you all fly out of here. Talk about some of the unmanned aircraft and some of the fixed wing stuff that operates out here and how that plays into the overall system.
Okay, so the aircraft you saw, we have the Airbus AS-350 A-STAR, which you flew in today. We have the UH-60 Black Hawk, which is or was a military aircraft at one time, which, you know, under the former U.S. Customs Service was purchased and built out for use as a medium lift helicopter. We have the King Air out there, the twin engine turboprop you saw, that is primarily used for us at this moment for the maritime environment. You've seen the tubs on the bottom, the domes. So those are primarily used in our maritime environments as a air-to-surface radar. We obviously don't use that here, but the camera system on it is works very well working out in the desert, looking for, say, a Border Patrol agent's working a group or a sensor goes off. We can go assist visually and then, you know, respond on the radio. We can validate an area. Hey, you know, we think we have some activity in this area. They can take that that camera system, look around, and say, yes, there is something happening, or no, there is not. And so they can either commit or move on to something else. We do have a smaller airplane we use, Cessna, high wing Cessna, that we use mainly for surveillance operations, because not only do we support U.S. Border Patrol, which is the lion's share of our hours, as I said, but we also support just about any alphabet agency you can think of in the Arizona area when they need assistance for, particularly if it's a border-related case that they're working on. So we'll assist them with that. The unmanned aerial system, it is a Predator, MQ-9 Predator. Here at the Tucson Air Branch specifically, we have a ground control station, and we fly it operationally for the mission portion. The landing and takeoff is done by other offices within the United States. So they take it off, they hand it to us, we'll fly the mission part of it, then figuratively, literally hand it back over to them, and they take care of the rest. Or we can hand it over to another office who has a ground control station. So now we can, you know, have a persistent surveillance platform in the air, you know, with that camera, that infrared camera, to help assist the agents on the ground. So that just gives us longer coverage where, I don't know how long you flew today, 3-4 hours, I assume?
Almost 4 hours.
So that kind of, you're probably a little bit worn out. So our pilots are doing that 4 to 5 days a week, 4 to 5 hours at a time. Wears you out, where with the unmanned system, it can go 18 hours, and they can just, you know, people can come in on different shifts and switch it out.
As you said, can be flown really from, I guess in theory, anywhere in the world, but at least anywhere in the U.S. It doesn't
right.
have to be flown here. Though, well, flown might be the wrong word, you know, controlled.
Yeah, it's still flown.
Yeah.
The we'll call it the box, the ground control system, it's a cockpit. You got a pilot and you have a sensor operator operating sensors if we hopped into that, our King Air. So it's flown the same. The rules are the same. They're talking air traffic control. It's all the same. The the camera on that, you know, from the altitudes they fly, you know, it's not like on TV where they're reading license plates or, you know, reading the writing on your shirt. It's everything's usually a white or a black blob, depending on which type of infrared they're using. And so we can say, yes, there is a body. Sometimes you can break out male, female.
Again, guides the men and women on the ground, or maybe a chopper pilot in closer, et cetera.
Correct. In a perfect world, it's a layered system. So, some sort of system or sensor would detect. The predator would validate, hold the group or whatever activity is going on until another airplane comes in, and then it moves on. Then that airplane, the manned aircraft, will hold the target. I hate to use too many military law enforcement terms, but hold the target. Then if we need, we can bring a helicopter in, and then we have that communication going back and forth. The officer safety piece of it is greatly appreciated, I know, from the ground, because we're seeing everything, you know. And whereas the agent putting hands on, his vision is limited to what he sees directly in front of him and not the overhead view.
Let me go back to rescues for a minute. You said 50 this year, 50 plus. Tucson sector, despite the big heat we've had, has a very low number of rescues, even when compared with the rest of the southern border. How did we get to that point where we have a low number of rescues compared to a lot of the other southern border sectors?
So the numbers that we count as rescues are included in the U.S. Border Patrol numbers, because any apprehensions that we personally make, you know, are turned over to the U.S. Border Patrol. Generally, I hate to use the word a lot, but many of our rescues, we have four-star agents on board. We will include them, you know, in the air crew as we go out. So the increase for us, I believe, has to do with, you know, the terrain we're finding ourselves in. Like I mentioned, the Babakiri Mountain Range, so that's 7,000 feet plus or minus. The Huachucas, that's upwards of 9,000. And some of the other areas that are just too rugged or unsafe for ground agents to get into. We have this equipment now, the hoist rescue system we have on our helicopters. We're just coming to maturity on that. We've had it, I think we're in our fourth or fifth year. So, and it's not something you just hang on a helicopter and go forth. There's a training process and a comfort process. So I would say our increase that we're seeing is because we have the equipment. And with that, I bet you there's probably less injuries to people on the ground trying to get some of these places, especially when, you know, somebody falls off a cliff and they're hanging on the side and there's no way to get there. So now we're dealing with, you know, these rescue specialists, ground rescue specialists coming in, rigging up ropes to rappel down, to rig up, to, you know, ascend that victim up. Then they still have to get off the mountain. So now with the UH-60 and its hoist system, we have the ability, in most cases, to go extract them, which makes it safer and quicker for everybody. So we get that victim or that patient, you know, to advance medical care as quickly as we can.
When it comes to, especially the UH-60s doing hoists and things like that, obviously they could be very close in to cliff faces and
yes.
and different terrain. Is that a 24-hour operation, or do you all tend to operate just on daylight?
We prefer daylight, and I would be comfortable saying 90-95% of rescues are in daylight, without pulling the numbers, but I would be really close. We train regularly, weekly. We do training for night hoist operations and night fast rope operations, so we have to insert some people. So we train that regularly. If it's a life, limb, or eyesight, like this has to happen now, then when we go through a risk mitigation process, which is a lot of evaluation of the aircraft, of the crew, the area, you know, risk versus reward. So it's pretty much a standard. It's fairly standardized in the aviation world. And we come to that yes or no decision. And that is made by the air crews. And then they bring it to their supervisor and their management of, yes, I can, no, we can't. Then us as managers and supervisors will talk through it. And if we don't like it, we can say no also. So, but we don't force them into going like, yes, you will do this.
Or I assume also once they get there, they say, oh, yes, we can go do this. And they get there and it's not exactly what they thought.
So our risk mitigation process is continuous. They could be in the middle of the rescue and call it or wrap it up and depart, especially, you know, stuff's too many things start happening in the aviation world. You got to call a timeout. And sometimes it's just climbing up the altitude, setting up an orbit, talking it through with the crew, communicating with the ground agents, and deciding whether you're going to, you know, reattack the rescue or if you're going to pull off and wait for better conditions. Because particularly in the mountains, the winds are like water in a river. Hits a rock, it can go any direction, it can change. There's swirls in there. So yes, the complexity of the rescue will be determined on site.